Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning.
Have you ever noticed how sometimes when reading fiction, the things that stand out the most to us, or at least to me, as being improbable or, well, not exactly realistic, are not the things that are big and bold, the things that are distinctly different and beyond the experiences of our regular world, but instead are the things that are very close to, but not exactly the same as, what we experience. Here, let me give you an example. Now, maybe this is a spoiler, but I think it's fair to assume that everybody listening to this episode of this show at this point has at least seen the movies of The Hobbit, if not read the book. But coming up very soon in the story, as we get towards the end of this book, they will have to confront a dragon. And that dragon will get very angry and will attack Lake Town. And Lake Town will defend itself. And somebody from Lake Town will shoot the dragon in the one spot that it's vulnerable in order to kill said dragon. Now, this is well beyond the experience of us in our own reality. Sure, some people go hunting for big game and things like that, but I can pretty much guarantee that nobody you know has actually fought a dragon, right? And yet, we accept that. This is fantasy. This is fiction. And in fiction, strange, mysterious things will happen. Gigantic, amazing events will happen. The unexpected will become real. You'll find a ring that turns you invisible. A man will turn into a bear and then back again. This is how fantasy works, and I think we all have come to expect that. But what about when the events of the story are similar enough to real life, but yet still improbable, unlikely, maybe even unrealistic? What I'm talking about here is the fact that at the point of the story that we are at right now, you have a bunch of dwarves stuck in barrels in very cold water for hours at a time. Now, you might be thinking, yeah, that sounds uncomfortable. I don't want to be in that situation. I've been in cold water for what feels like a long period of time, and at some point it becomes very, very uncomfortable and you need to get out. Some of you probably have even dealt with dangerous life and death situations around bodies of water, and you might be more aware of the danger of this kind of thing. If you delve a little bit deeper into what happens when human beings spend any time submerged in water, even a few degrees below body temperature water, which normally feels pretty warm, can actually kill you after a certain period of time. They've done research around this, and for example, the survivors of the Titanic, had they been wet or submerged for over a certain period of time, they wouldn't have survived because of how cold the water was. But even if you were to have been on a Titanic that somehow shipwrecked in a tropical location, water that's 90 degrees Fahrenheit, which is below body temperature, would still eventually kill you after a certain period of time. So where am I going with this? Well, the dwarves and Bilbo have been wet for hours, stuck in or on, in Bilbo's case, a barrel, and their body temperature would be dangerously, dangerously low. And here, I've done a little bit of research into this. The Forest River that they are in flows down from the mountains north of Mirkwood and then through Mirkwood, right? And then to Lake Town. Chances are that this river and the other rivers that this is going to meet with are all fed by mountain springs, which are very cold. How cold exactly? Well, a typical mountain-fed river is somewhere between 40 and 55 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 4 to 13 degrees Celsius. This is very cold. Forest environments include lots of shade, and the nighttime temperature of the water can shift a little bit. It can get a little bit warmer or a little bit colder depending on the sunshine, but for most of this, it's underground, it's shaded, and so it's probably closer to the colder end of that equation, closer to 40 than 55 degrees. So how would human beings deal with this? Well, according to the U.S. Coast Guard and some of the cold water survival research that they've done, the expected exhaustion survival time estimates of 50 degrees Fahrenheit, 10 degrees Celsius water means that within the first 2 hours, you will start feeling shivering cold, of course, but then by 3 to 6 hours, you will lose dexterity and your body will start to shut down. At 45 degrees Fahrenheit, 7 degrees Celsius, you will hit cold shock and have fast heat loss, and your survival time reduces to maybe 2 to 4 hours. At 40 degrees Fahrenheit, 4.4 degrees Celsius, hypothermia will happen very quickly, sometime between 30 minutes to 3 hours, depending on the individual, the size of your body, all of those kinds of things, how active you are, how much energy you have to move around to try to keep yourself warm. But within 3 hours, you are most likely dead. Now, we can stretch this out a little bit for dwarves. Dwarves are supposed to be hardier than regular humans. They survive in harsh conditions like underground, where temperatures can be extreme in one direction or another, depending on how cold it is or if there's lava sources or something like that in the environment. And, of course, this is fiction. But you see what I'm saying here? Especially for Bilbo, even on top of the barrels, chances are, at his small size, he may not have been able to survive more than 1 to 3 hours. But in the story, they make it through the night to the morning to the dock, and then they're pulled out of the water, and then they go on a raft, and at no point do they really have the ability to dry off from inside the barrels. They may not be submerged anymore, but you can see how the time frame going on in the story is much longer than what the average person would have been able to survive. And that's because it's fantasy. So there you go. Just wanted to throw that out there as a, hey, this is kind of notable and fantastic in its own right, even though it doesn't seem as huge or as strange as turning into a bear or fighting a dragon. So there you go. So keep that in mind as we go through this section of The Hobbit, and we'll find out what happens with the dwarves and Bilbo as they get to the end of their little river journey. Here we go. The day grew lighter and warmer as they floated along. After a while, the river rounded a steep shoulder of land that came down upon their left. Under its rocky feet, like an inland cliff, the deepest stream had flowed lapping and bubbling. Suddenly, the cliff fell away. The shores sank. The trees ended. Then Bilbo saw a sight. The lands opened wide about him, filled with the waters of the river, which broke up and wandered in 100 winding courses, or halted in marshes and pools dotted with isles on every side. But still a strong water flowed on steadily through the midst, and far away, its dark head in a torn cloud, there loomed the mountain. We finally get the first actual sight of the mountain, and it's by Bilbo. He's the only one outside of the barrels at this point. And there it is, looming. Notice the choice of words. This mountain is both a welcome sight and an unwelcome sight at the same time. It means that they are closer to the end of their journey, but it also means that they need to surmount the dragon the situation with the dragon. I guess not surmount the actual dragon, because nobody needs to be riding on Smaug's back, but they need to deal with the dragon, and Bilbo knows this. And the way the mountain looks to him is ominous. It kind of looks over this part of the world, domineering on the horizon. And what Bilbo feels here is probably very similar to what all the people from Lake Town feel, seeing that mountain in the distance. It's always there. It's always a reminder that at any moment, a dragon, right on the edge of their world, might decide to come out. So Bilbo is riding along on this raft, and there are raftmen here navigating the rest of the way to Lake Town. And Bilbo realizes that he's more lucky than he had guessed. And it says lucky again in the text. This is multiple times now that this keeps coming up. They talk about trade and what's going on with the waterways, the growth of the traffic on the river as the roads out of the east towards Mirkwood vanished and fell into disuse, and bickerings between the lakemen and the wood elves about the upkeep of the river, the care of the banks, and we come to learn more about the dynamic of what's going on here. The river is the only safe way between these two locations. The forest road has become basically condemned, and we know why. But there's more going on in the situation, and Tolkien, as he tends to do, fills us in on a lot of the details. Great floods and rains had swollen the waters that flowed east, and there had been an earthquake or two, which people were blaming on the dragon. The marshes and bogs had spread wider and wider on either side. Paths had vanished. Many a rider and wanderer also, if they had tried to find the lost ways across. So this is a changing situation, and it's dangerous. The elf road is in little use, and this river was extremely valuable and guarded by the wood elves. And we get this line here. So you see, Bilbo had come, in the end, by the only road that was any good. Bilbo and the party, for all of what felt like their misfortunes going through this forest, had the best possible experience. There was no version of them getting through this situation, dealing with the forest, the spiders, the enchanted river, the wood elves, in any better way. That's how dangerous the situation was. The fact that they are alive at all and made it through is the best version, the only road that would have worked. And then we get this little update about Gandalf. Turns out that right about this time, he's finishing up what he was doing. We know he was investigating Beredur, and he is now trying to figure out where they went. And he's continuing his journey as well, but Bilbo doesn't know it. And that's about all the details we get about that here. So now we're back to Bilbo and his experience. And similar to his experience with the eagles in their eyrie and some other situations we've been through with him recently, he is not in good shape. He's unhappy. He's hungry. It feels like everything's going on forever. He has a nasty cold in his nose. And of course, the way the mountain is looking at him is threatening. And yet, things are, of course, worse for the dwarves, but we don't get their experience quite yet. The river continues, it speeds up, and then Bilbo sees the Long Lake. And we get this wonderful line here about him never having imagined any water that was not the sea that could look that big. And I don't recall if Bilbo had ever seen the sea. I don't think he had, although he's not in the Shire that far from the ocean. Maybe, but probably not. But I think this is probably here more for our understanding of the situation. The opposite shore looked so small and far, and yet on the northerly end, which pointed toward the mountain, you couldn't see the shore at all. This long lake was extremely long, to the point where it would go past the horizon. Which means, and this is another fun little science fact, that horizon that you can see even on a clear day, like for example, if you watch a ship sail into the ocean and then the mast of the ship goes below the horizon, the total distance you can see is only about 3 miles. But that's still pretty big. And in Tolkien's fashion, he continues on explaining exactly how the river structure and this lake work and where the water comes from and how there's another branch of the river that feeds, there's two rivers that feed this lake, and one comes directly out of the Lonely Mountain from a waterfall right at the front where the gates were. And I'm sure that's beautiful, but Bilbo isn't there yet to see that. But we get a sense that this world works in realistic ways. And that is the contrast that makes Lake Town even more interesting. Bilbo gets finally close enough to see the strange town he heard the elves speak of in the king's cellars. And what he finds is an entire town built on wooden platforms in the lake. Now, this isn't impossible. There are definitely locations in the real world built on waterways or lakes and structures like that. Somewhere like Venice, for example, is a similar but not exactly the same kind of situation. So it is possible to do this, but to put an entire town built up on wooden stilts in the middle of a lake is an interesting idea. And we learn that this town is the remnants of what was previously a much bigger community, including the city of Dale, which was at the feet of the mountain, which is in ruins now. And what seems to be left of the human community seem to be living in Lake Town, but even Lake Town is smaller than it had previously been. We find out that the rotting piles of a greater town could still be seen along the shores when the waters sank in a drought. There were other parts of this town that used to exist that are now just under the water. And before that line, we get this interesting little detail about Dale. Dale in the north was rich and prosperous. They had been wealthy and powerful, and there had been fleets of boats on the waters, and some were filled with gold, and some with warriors in armor. And there had been wars and deeds, which were now only a legend. And I'm going to get a little bit more into that in the bonus episode this week, so I'll save that for our patrons. Because that plays into the history of the location, but really we're talking about where things are right now. And the community that is here right now is descended from this community, and yet men don't live as long as dwarves, and the people who live here are descendants of the people who would have been in this area when Smaug took the mountain. It's generations that have gone by at this point. 171 years. So even the great-grandparents of the existing people in Lake Town most likely were not in existence 171 years ago. So for this community, the whole situation kind of borders on myth at some point. Chances are none of them have actually seen the dragon, and the stories about the old or ancient dwarves who used to live in the mountains are now just songs and stories that some of them still sing, but yet that feels so long ago. But the people of Lake Town hold on to their hopes, and some sing songs about Thror and Thrain returning and bringing back gold and how it would flow down the river. But again, this was all just in the old memories that still exist among the community there. And that community is actively working with the elves for trade, and they come out and they basically bring together everything that's been transited down the river into one location, and they take care of all the items, but this specific float with the barrels is left floating. The elves and the raftmen and the boat people go feast in Lake Town. They're hungry, so they go get some food. And this gives Bilbo an opportunity. The barrels here are left floating again, and so of course the dwarves are probably miserable and cold even more again in the cold water. And Bilbo has the opportunity to pull the barrels in and start opening them up. And the first one he opens is Thorin's. He had a famished and a savage look, like a dog that has been chained and forgotten in a kennel for a week. And that description is so accurate. I can just imagine a very grumpy, disheveled, and worn out what is supposed to be king of these dwarves coming out of a barrel. In fact, he's so hard to recognize that you only would know he was Thorin at this point because of the golden chain and the color of his now dirty and tattered sky blue hood with its tarnished silver tassel. Remember all the different hoods and the different colors of the different dwarves. And this little detail I find particularly accurate. It was some time before he could even be polite to the hobbit. He's such in a bad mood. But it totally makes sense because they just survived something that would have killed most regular people, like we discussed at the beginning of the show. And we have to remember that Bilbo is miserable too. He has been suffering as much as they have, just in different ways. And the discussion here, at least the response that Bilbo gives, it's not really a discussion, but Bilbo's response here is almost surprising. It's very bold. "Well, are you alive or are you dead?" asked Bilbo quite crossly. And the narrator reminds us that he doesn't fully recognize the difference between what he went through and what the dwarves went through, you know, being that he could still use his body and had eaten something and they hadn't. But we also get this line, are you still in prison or are you free? If you want food and if you want to go on with this silly adventure, it's yours after all and not mine. You had better slap your arms and rub your legs and try and help me get the others out while there is a chance. He is super grumpy, but at no point, I can't think of a single other point in the story up to this point that he would so boldly and so rudely speak to any of the dwarves, let alone Thorin, to his face. And I think that comes to show two things. Both Bilbo has been through a lot at this point, and he also kind of hasn't been able to talk to anybody else, so he doesn't feel particularly thanked for his hard effort, but he's maybe starting to feel like he's the one doing all the heavy lifting. He's starting to feel a little bit emboldened, like they need him instead of him needing them. Maybe? I feel like it's more the first part than the second. But I also think that had the situation gone about differently and Bilbo hadn't been responsible for so much of what had kept them alive so far and now freed them, that he wouldn't have had the gall to say it like that earlier in the story. Thorin's able to gather himself together and help pull in some more barrels and get the rest of the dwarves out of them. Dwalin and Balin are the next to come out, and they were the most unhappy, and they wouldn't even help. Biffer and Boffer were less knocked about, but drier, and yet they still couldn't do anything but lay down and just try to feel better. Filly and Killy were much better, at least in their situation. I love the way this is described. Who were young for dwarves and had also been packed more neatly with plenty of straw into smaller casks, came out more or less smiling, with only a bruise or two, and a stiffness that soon wore off. So maybe there's something to the survivability of dwarves, especially the younger ones, going on here, but they were also packed better. And then we get this line. I hope I never smell the smell of apples again, said Feely. My tub was full of it. To smell apples everlastingly when you can scarcely move and are cold and sick with hunger is maddening. I could eat anything in the wide world now for hours on end, but not an apple. We've got this humorous moment, and this is another one of those points of levity that take a rough situation and try to lighten it a little bit. So Bilbo, Thorin, Killy, and Filly are able to pull the rest of them over, get the rest of them out. We get this wonderful little list here. Poor fat Bomber was asleep or senseless. Poor Bomber. Dory, Nori, Ori, Owen, Glowin were waterlogged and seemed only half alive. They all had to be carried one by one and laid helpless on the shore. They are exhausted and barely alive at this point. Which makes sense. As we talked about at the beginning of the show, this ordeal, them being in barrels for this period of time in the cold, without food, without any ability to really move around, would not be survivable by our realistic standards of the way that the world works. And I have a feeling that Tolkien wouldn't have had, well, he definitely wouldn't have had the research that I quoted at the beginning of the episode, but he would have had a general sense of how dangerous it would be to be submerged in cold water or even just cool water for a long period of time. So I don't feel like in this situation he's pushing the boundaries so much toward something that would be impossible, that he knew would be impossible, but really just kind of was skirting what in his mind and in his experience, without any scientific knowledge about this, what he expected would be the edge of what would be survivable in general. And I think he's kind of close. It's a little bit beyond the reality of it, but it makes sense. It makes sense for him to be designing something that is supposed to feel like they're at the very edge of what is survivable for them. And yeah, they may not be realistic, but again, these are dwarves. This is a hobbit. Dwarves and hobbits aren't real either. So maybe they are a little bit more hardy. But notice how many of them come out of the barrels and can't even lend a hand. They would know how dangerous the situation was for them and for everyone else in the barrels. And yet they can't do anything. It's easy to think of the situation with the spiders and go, oh, well, the spider situation was probably worse than this. But if you look at everything and the way it all plays out, it wasn't. It seems more dangerous because you have spiders and they were about to get eaten. But in this situation, they're actually worse off than at the end of that other situation. At the end of the spider situation, they could at least fend for themselves and try to fight their way out and walk and work together. At the end of this situation, most of them can barely move. It takes them a while to recuperate. It's kind of like how people in general are more afraid of a shark attack than a bee sting. But the number of human deaths per year by shark bite is in the very, very low single digits to early double digit numbers every year, something like 5 to 12 people a year, something like that. The number of people who die from bee stings is in the thousands. You're way more likely to die from bees than you are from sharks. Same kind of thing here. You're more likely to die from exposure to the cold and the wet river for a very long period of time than you are to being killed by those spiders, even though the spiders seem much more scary. And I think that's something that we can absolutely give credit to Tolkien for. He understood the dangers of being out in an environment exposed, and maybe that comes from his time in the military. The world out there, an uncomfortable environment, can often be more dangerous than a giant spider. And at the end of unpacking all the dwarves, we get this. "Well, here we are," said Thorin, "and I suppose we ought to thank our stars and Mr. Baggins. I am sure he has a right to expect it, though I wish he could have arranged a more comfortable journey. Still, all very much at your service once more, Mr. Baggins. No doubt we shall feel properly grateful when we are fed and recovered. In the meanwhile, what next?" "I suggest Lake Town," said Bilbo. "What else is there?"
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
"Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?"
"Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today." "Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?"
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
This is the Waffle 110. First of all, I wanted to thank you so much for doing an entire bonus episode off of my idea, my comment. I did not think that was nearly good enough to have an entire episode dedicated to it. You answered so many of my questions, and you gave me so much more to think about and to read about and all sorts of different things. Just thank you so much for that. I also wanted to say how much I love this show. The show means a lot to me at this point. I've been listening to it for over a year at this point. I've been keeping up, and I binged through, like, you know, all of them when I first found it. And it means so much to me. I love this community of Lord of the Rings nerds we've built, and we just all feel like we're a bunch of people who love the same thing and love talking about it. And it's a really good community, and I really love it. And I just never stop this show, please. I am so happy that we're going through The Hobbit right now. I'm loving all of the little details we dig into. I love that we're going to go through Lord of the Rings in the future. I'm super excited for that, because I know that's like, there's going to be so much. It's going to take us forever, and I cannot wait. I'm trying to think of other things to say right now, but I can't really think of anything. I don't want to take up too much time. Just thank you so much for this show. Please never stop doing it. And I want you to know that you're awesome, Tom. Yeah. Bye.
Wow. Thanks, Waffle. I appreciate the comment. And thank you for the good question, which led to that bonus episode discussing, for those of you who don't know, who, heck, if you might want to sign up on Patreon and listen to that episode, Waffle's question was about the influence of Sauron affecting the forest of Mirkwood around him and the similarities to Melian and how she affected the forest around her, the girdle of Melian and all of that. And I got into discussion about the similarities and differences and why that seems maybe active in both situations, but maybe also passive, but maybe not. We went through the different variables there. But thank you, Waffle. And you might be wondering, how did Waffle send me a message? Well, I set this up recently. If you head to voiceline.app/LOTRLorecast, you can leave me a voicemail and it might end up on a future show. In fact, I already got a few of them. I announced this on the Discord, on the Patreon, on social media. So if you're following me or this show on any of those locations, you'll get notifications earlier. And even on the Patreon one, you can sign up for free in order to get these kinds of updates and notifications. But yeah, I got a few. This is the first one we're going to feature. And if you leave me a voicemail again, and there's a link in the show description, but again, it's voiceline.app/LOTRLorecast. I'll get around to potentially putting it on the show. And you're very welcome, Waffle. Thank you. The praise is amazing. It really does make my day every time I find out that this show makes other people's day, you know, so all of that. So thank you for leaving that message. And I'm absolutely excited to get into The Lord of the Rings. I know we're getting closer and closer to the end of The Hobbit, so it will happen probably in some month's time because we go through these very, very slowly with kind of a magnifying glass. But yeah, absolutely. The Hobbit is going to end in a spectacular way. Everything kind of comes together at the end, and I'm going to have so much fun going over all of that. And then all the details in The Lord of the Rings, which is like this turned up to 11. I'm sure some of you are old enough to know that reference. But there you go. Thank you, Waffle. And to everyone else who's left a voice message already, thank you for your messages. I will try to keep them like one per episode when we have some. So yours still might show up. Don't fret. They might be here. Don't worry. Also, I mentioned Patreon, patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. You can join us just like Freckles and Chelsea W and Hiking Canadian Viking and Stephanie, who recently joined. Thank you for your support. You're all wonderful. And all of you who support me on the Patreon, keep this going, are absolutely amazing. You can get t-shirts and stickers, but most importantly, you can get all of the bonus episodes, which there's roughly the same number of bonus episodes as there are regular episodes. So if you are getting to the end of the show, which is maybe currently right now because you've been listening to it, and you want more content, absolutely get the subscription, burn through all that stuff really, really fast, or, you know, binge it or whatever. There's lots of ways to engage with the stuff, and everything on Patreon doesn't have ads, so that's even better. So you can do all that stuff over there. And you can also get shout outs every week, like our VIP patrons. Let's see if I can get through the list. AK Music Lover, Aldarian Was Right, Apollo, Avariel, who recently updated me on the pronunciation. Hopefully I'm actually saying it right this time. If I'm not, then just, words are hard. Azzle Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Captain Legolas, Turner, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Fulcrum, Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Ginger Fury, Who On Is My Hero, Jezzer, Katie Stout, Capenna, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Matt, Party Snacks, Philip M, Richard J, Rosie Rose, Single Ent Looking for Ent Wives, The Bestest Boy, TJT, and Tour Son of Hoor. Thank you, all of you. You know, one of my favorite shows to watch on YouTube is, channels is Screen Crush, because they go over, like, the stuff you missed. It's kind of similar to going over The Hobbit the way we've been doing, but they'll take like the latest Marvel TV show and they'll go over all the things that you may have missed, or Star Wars or whatever. It's a great channel. Go check out Screen Crush. One of the things that Ryan, the host, does throughout almost every episode, as he's pointing out like things in the backgrounds and stuff like that, they'll circle like something in the background and then like, oh, that character in the background over here, that's your mom. And then he'll just keep going. So I almost want to just add in your mom to the list somewhere. I hope you find that funny, but I don't know. I'll consider doing it in the future. Now that I've called it out, it's not going to be as fun. If I had just said your mom during that list, maybe somebody would have noticed. I don't know. Or just thought maybe somebody's name is your mom. So I guess I had to call it out as a potential future joke, just so you'd be aware. This is weird. I don't know why I'm explaining this right now, but we're just going to leave it in the episode. Thank you for all of your support. Also, if you'd like to help out in other ways, leave me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with a review. I'll read that out on a future episode. No new ones this week, at least that I can see here in the US. So if you do so, it might get on next week's show. It's another way to get your voice in the episode. And just one more reminder, in case you need that link one more time, voiceline.app/LOTR Lorecast. That's how you can leave me a voice message. And thank you for being here again. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your weekend. If you happen to have friends who enjoy Lord of the Rings, recommend the show. You all know that I couldn't do this without you, so thank you so very much. And until next time, try not to get stuck in a bunch of barrels in the water, because chances are you'd only survive a few hours, not as long as the dwarves did. So there you go. All right, see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Hey, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. Build a customized renter's policy with American Family Insurance so you can protect your tandem bike on the go. Thief! Oh, he is struggling with that two-seater. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at amfam.com.
Some exclusions may apply. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.